Just quickly, I want to introduce also my research team who's sitting in the audience. We have Layla Abushamat right there, Dominic Momozan right there in the second row, and then our executive director of the Center for Culinary Medicine, Dr. Timothy Harlan, sitting in the back. So we got the full force with us this morning, and glad that we can share some of what we're being able to do at Tulane with you all this morning. So this is a map that I'm sure everybody has seen if we are involved with public health. Just the ever-increasing numbers of diabetes, obesity, whatever have you in any chronic disease, this map is pretty much getting darker and darker as we move from 20 years ago to current. And then being now in Louisiana, we always can brag about the fact that we are probably one of the darker states at all times. So 35.7% of the U.S. population is obese. But then you look and you know that one of the things that obesity is correlated with is type 2 diabetes incidence. Tulane is in Orleans Parish. Parish is kind of our way of saying county. In Louisiana. So we have 11.7% incidence of type 2 diabetes. Jefferson Parish is right adjacent to us at 11.1%, and St. Bernard Parish is also adjacent to Orleans Parish at 10.8%. And we just want to compare this to, say, even a region right here where this conference is taking place, Alameda County, California, right across the bay, and similar populations, similar demographics, but they're only at 7.3% and compared to the U.S. average of 8.3%. So it does show that there is a little bit more of a disparity in New Orleans, and there's this possible cry that we need to do something more in regards to addressing chronic disease in our patient population. This is kind of a good indication of what we can choose to eat in New Orleans. Speaking with physicians and also preceptors I've worked with as a medical student, the complaint is, well, we tell our patients that, you know, they should eat fish, and because that's a lean protein, right? And instead, they turn around, they eat a catfish po' boy covered with mayonnaise, fully dressed, may I say, with pickles, lettuce, everything from along the gambit. We tell our patients to eat breakfast, but then breakfast includes sausage, grits, eggs, all the great Southern Cajun food that you're going to be able to get in that diet. And so even though they are following these messages are being construed in ways that they are still consuming foods that are not necessarily advantageous to long-term health outcomes. And this is a diet that can be served in moderation, but you'd be surprised, many of our patients eat this diet on a daily basis. So current practices. Kind of want to transition now into how nutrition is taught in medical schools. As future physicians, we will certainly have a role in being able to talk about nutrition and lifestyle modification with our patients. And so it's really key to figure out how exactly we're training future physicians in regards to having that role one day. So before we started this teaching kitchen or this Center for Culinary Medicine, this is exactly what we would do in regards to nutrition education at Tulane, and this is actually fairly consistent across many other schools. There are about 160 medical schools in the United States. Essentially, it would be very passive learning. So the example at Tulane is we would read 4 to 5 articles and then take a test on it the next day. We would also memorize a list of vitamins, match them to some definition, whether they be clinical or not, and then we would be essentially told that we understood nutrition science. This type of passive learning, as many of you can also agree, once you take your test, you walk out the door, it's in one ear and out the other. So one thing that the University of North Carolina has done, which is really, really interesting, is that they've gone a step above some of this starting 3 to 4 years ago. It's called the Nutrition in Medicine Curriculum. They've oriented themselves to be able to create 50 standardized patient videos where essentially you have a standardized patient as well as a clinician, both being played by actors, and they actually walk through a clinical situation where if somebody comes in with high cholesterol or type 2 diabetes or hypertension, that these are the talking points. These are the ways that you would engage your patient in conversation. And medical students from the University of North Carolina, as well as really anybody from around the country, would have access to this type of curriculum. So that's kind of the current practices that we were able to find in the current literature. Furthermore, we see in the 2004 Institute of Medicine report that the United States medical education curriculums fail to provide sufficient training to address social and behavioral risk factors, nutrition counseling certainly being in that. We're very good at knowing the pathophysiology of all those diseases that we have to know for our board exams, but can we actually deliver that into applicable information for our patients? Statistically speaking, we find that most medical schools aren't even meeting the National Academy of Sciences recommendation of 25 hours of nutrition education throughout the 4 years. And looking at even more statistical analysis, 15.4 of those hours are in the first and second years for those who do even do some type of nutrition education. But then in the third and fourth years, when we as medical students actually get the opportunity to work with patients, we only get 4.2 hours. Kruder and colleagues tell us that physician counseling does have an impact with in regards to lifestyle modification. In regards to smoking, NODS ratio of 1.54, that patients actually reported that they quit smoking for at least 6 months. And also in terms of lifestyle diet changes, it's an odds ratio of 1.35. So you see that physicians do have a role, that they can impact their patient in terms of long-term change if physicians actually go ahead and do these type of counseling measures. But we have to make sure that physicians are well-trained to be able to do that. So some of the past medical nutrition curriculum survey data, this is showing that, this is also from the University of North Carolina, this is Spencer and colleagues, designed a survey where 970 students answered at all then at the beginning of third year, which is right before you get your clinical experience, and then at some point during your fourth year. So these results are based off of these 970 students. Now, what was the attitude in terms of thinking that nutrition counseling was even clinically relevant? Well, you see that there's a decline as you move further on in your clinical, in your medical school training. 72% to 61% to 46%. So really, when you're about to graduate with your MD or your DO and become that actual clinician where you have actual patients, you are at the lowest level in terms of thinking that nutrition counseling is even clinically relevant. Here you see that as seniors, so as fourth year medical students, 19% believed to be properly prepared. So only one out of five medical students thought that they were properly prepared to be able to engage their patient in some type of conversation about nutrition and lifestyle change. And only 17% reported that they actually did any of that in their third or fourth year. So you see that not only is nutrition education not being emphasized as much during the third and fourth year, but students aren't really getting the message and aren't even able to apply anything as much in their third and fourth year. So we also conducted a survey where we sent it out to our first year, second year, third years, and fourth years beginning this school year. So this was back at the beginning of August. So 52-question survey sent via email. Students were given reminders by both our research team, and we also had our medical school administration behind the effort as well. We would have our dean send out reminders to make sure that students were filling this out. This was essentially like an online kind of Survey Monkey-like survey, so we used a survey tool similar to that. 26 surveys were thrown out due to incompleteness. It was approved by our IRB at the Tulane University School of Medicine. Ultimately, 399 surveys were used for data analysis for a 53.5% response rate. 395 were totally complete, I should say, in which there were four surveys that did not include some of the demographic information at the end. So you see that in terms of first year, second year, third years, and fourth years, that's the breakdown of how many people answered and the percentages at which they answered it in terms of the rate of response. see. Oh, there we go. All right. So I wanted to share essentially the first aspect of our survey looked at how students perceived the importance of nutrition counseling. All right. So we asked questions like nutrition assessment and counseling. Should they be included in any routine appointment in regards to specific diagnosis and treatment? Another question we asked is specific advice. Should that be offered in your typical appointment in helping patients improve their eating habits? And we see that on a scale of 1 to 5, broken down by preferred specialty of what students thought that they were going to enter, we see that family medicine does score the highest. So that's good news that those students who want to become some of the ground level primary care physicians who are going to be at the forefront of making sure that their patients stay healthy across all aspects of the lifespan are the ones that are scoring the highest on this 1 to 5 scale. And we also realize that some of these other specialties, they're not terrible. You know, it's still above kind of the middle point of 3. So you do also see that mostly students at Tulane do have some type of, do value the importance of nutrition counseling. So you see some of the p-values down there, family medicine versus pediatrics, emergency medicine, orthopedics, and so on. So that's there. This graph is a little bit deceiving because it's kind of like a reverse scale that we use. So actually, the lower the score, the more competent somebody thought that they were able to be able to counsel their patients. And this is perceived competence. So it's good news that as you move from first year to second year to third year to at least second year to third year, that there's an improved competence level. However, between the third and fourth year, we notice that there is likely a plateau that occurs. And this is a little bit of an alarming surprise because after your third year, after a full year of being able to work with patients, you realize that there really is no improvement potentially in the ability to counsel your patients. And so people are stuck at that kind of level two level where they really are only saying, I'm somewhat competent, not totally competent at being able to talk about diabetes or calories or role of dietary cholesterol. And these are all guidelines that are talked about in the American Association of Medical Colleges and the Institute of Medicine that physicians should be able to do once they enter practice. And so the conclusions are that maybe an additional component needs to be added to the clinical years. And another component needs to be, there's something that needs to be done in regards to medical education. We've already visited some of the current methods in regards to this. So now we have to ask the question, what exactly is Tulane doing about this? We see the data. We see that medical students, first of all, do not feel fully confident when they enter practice. In regards to things like diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol. Sure, we know what medications to give, but do we know what type of lifestyle modification to be able to give? What type of advice to give? Because there are many guidelines out there that say that pharmacological intervention is not always the first-line treatment. And so this type of advice is possibly lacking in our education right now. Number two, only one-fifth of students actually speak to their patients about lifestyle in their clinical years. Number three, most medical schools are not even emphasizing nutrition education to meet the guidelines of 25 hours. And number four, we have an obesity epidemic and a chronic disease epidemic, specifically even in New Orleans, Louisiana, that continues to get worse year by year. It's not improving, and therefore it's a call to action that we might need to do something different. So this is what Tulane is doing about this, and this is what I want to share with you. This is actually a fairly interesting graph that we have, and I'll show it right here. I'm really only going to be able to have time to talk about the community aspect and the medical curriculum, and we can go into more of some of these other aspects during the discussion phase. And this is actually not even the most complete up-to-date chart of everything that we're doing. So we've really done a lot in the last 2 years to really be able to build this program up. So giving some of the highlights, starting with first and second years, we call ourselves T1s and T2s, Tulane 1 and Tulane 2 rather than Medical Student 1, Medical Student 2. But essentially first years and second years, We've designed a curriculum where students are going to be able to attend 8 classes. Each of these classes are going to be 3 hours each for a total of 24 hours in the first 2 years. During these classes, students are going to be able to review the science and biochemistry behind macronutrient processes. They're going to be able to learn, again, protein, carbohydrates, and fats. But rather than being able to just have to spit it back out, they're going to be able to have some type of aspect where they're going to have an applied situation. Number two, the feature in these classes are that they're going to be able to then transition to the kitchen after they've reviewed some of this basic science. They're going to be able to learn actual food preparation styles. They're going to learn culinary skills. They're going to learn cooking skills that are going to emphasize lean protein, good carbohydrates, healthy fats, what it actually means to tell your patient to eat a good fat diet, a low salt diet, rather than just say, do that and come back and see me in 6 months. You're going to be able to actually show them the spaghetti recipe or the pork recipe or what have you, or at least even start the discussion of what a healthy breakfast means. Number three, we as medical students are very, very guilty in the first 2 years of saying, well, if it's not on our board exam, we don't really care. It's just kind of the way it is. So we've also integrated that aspect into it, that we know that nutrition is on our step one and step two board exams. So we also create board exam style questions for students to be able to answer based on nutrition. Starting in the third year, we are going to be holding disease-specific seminars. Actually, in 2 weeks, when we go back to Tulane, we're going to be doing one on hypertension. We're going to start with a clinical case. We're going to show how a patient who started on pharmacological therapy but then through lifestyle modification was able to come off of this medication. We're going to go to the kitchen, learn different recipes that are going to benefit and complement that type of lifestyle. And then as we eat dinner together, we're going to talk about how some of these skills can be integrated into a clinical setting. And this is, I think, at the T4 level, as a fourth-year medical student, this is where it gets really, really exciting. We've set up a partnership with Johnson & Wales, which is a culinary school in Providence, Rhode Island. And fourth-year medical students are going to have the opportunity to go to culinary school for 1 month to be able to learn how to cook. They're going to be with culinary nutrition students. They're going to be in the labs actually cooking. And then they're going to also have an outpatient experience to be able to apply these skills in working with dietitians and other allied healthcare professionals and patients of what they have learned so far in their three and a half years to be able to do this in an outpatient setting. So, as for the community portion I want to talk about right here, we have students now in this service learning aspect. We have to do 20 hours as a first year and 30 hours as a second year in regards to community service. With students being trained in this model, we then have students go to our clinics as well as our community health fairs to essentially teach and work with patients everything that they've had the ability to do already in their clinical setting. So students are learning how to do something in an applied manner, and then they're able to quickly turn that around and work with patients. It's this integrative lifestyle modification change that we are starting very, very early on in training that we are able to impact some type of at least nutrition education foundation to be formed. Now, the goal is not to train gourmet chefs. All right, we're still going to be doctors at the end of the day. We're still going to know that we give medication for cholesterol, that we give medication for diabetes, that we give certain medications. However, this is actually going to be able to serve as a foundation to be able to show patients that healthy food is not necessarily tasting bad, that it doesn't cost a lot of money, and that ultimately it doesn't even take that much time to prepare. And now, as future physicians, we're going to be able to understand that. We're going to be able to debunk some of these myths to be able to ultimately impact our patients' lives. We can actually talk about grocery shopping, grocery lists, going to shop for certain ingredients that are going to be very, very beneficial. Say, putting lentils in your whole wheat pasta rather than putting beef inside of non-whole wheat pasta. And essentially, we've calculated it out that the protein content is about the same, but you can only imagine that instead of putting beef in your pasta rather than lentils, the beef option is going to be a little bit more unhealthy. We've also integrated things like garlic and onions and peppers to use as natural flavor enhancers rather than pouring a ton of salt And so when you combine all of this, you end up with a pretty good spaghetti dish. And we've actually done some taste tests, and patients dumbfoundedly realize that they're not actually picking the beef, and they're picking the one with lentils, and they're so surprised that it tastes so good. So debunking some of these myths is very, very key. And this is only one microcosm of what we're doing. I wish we had more time to be able to talk a little bit more. So future questions. What is the most effective way to teach medical students in regards to this process? And what are the health outcomes of some of our patients in community clinics? And how are we going to be able to evaluate our students in regards to board scores, as well as maybe even have a standardized patient component where we're going to have to make sure that somebody knows how to prepare a good meal before we give them their medical degrees. Before I end, I just want to acknowledge the dean of our school, Dr. Benjamin Sachs. He has been a tireless advocate in regards to our project, one of our chief fundraisers. So when you have the dean of your medical school being your primary, one of your primary fundraisers, it's huge, and very, very appreciative for his efforts. Dr. Timothy Harlan sitting in the back, he's our executive director for the Center for Culinary Medicine, and he has also worked nonstop to be able to make sure that this is a vision that can be applied day in and day out in New Orleans. Chef Leah Saris, whoever thought that a medical school would hire an executive chef to be on staff in the history of the world. Well, she's would like to say she's the first one. She's our program manager, and she has developed all of this curriculum that I've been able to share with you today, in addition to way more that I wish if I had 2 hours to talk to you about, we could share really all of her work. And also my wonderful research team, Layla right there, Dominic, Danielle could not make it today, and neither could Esther. Danielle's been a very key component on our team, and Esther's the team president, who is the primary student leader for all of this. So thank you so much for coming out this morning. I hope this is a program that you enjoyed, and I hope we can make some dents in chronic disease and health outcomes in Louisiana. So thank you so much. Sure. Well, thank you for the question. Yes. So actually, so the survey that we developed, the 52-question survey, we're going to be modifying year to year, but essentially it's going to go along with the same type of theme. And I think it's really going to get exciting when we do the survey again, say, in April or May. And essentially some of the students who will be taking that survey will have gone through part of the curriculum already, and we start comparing the results. And then we, of course, also will be giving it to third and fourth year medical students. They've also had more of the curriculum. And I think it certainly is certainly on our docket that those fourth years who become interns and residents, that we continue to assess that as well. So actually looking back towards the flow chart, and let's see if I can kind of get back to it, you'll see that there's a CME point as well. So actually on Saturday, this coming Saturday, we have homecoming at Tulane. So we're going to have about 100 alumni physicians coming back to New Orleans, and we're going to hold a session very similar to this in regards to our teaching kitchen sharing what they have. So yes, absolutely, we're going to be doing this all across the career span of physicians, and continually assessing how this program works in terms of evaluation. Absolutely. So actually, so Dr. Harlan, he's writing the curriculum more so as we speak. We're sending our first two or three students in January. So essentially what it is to give a little bit more detail. Kind of in the mornings, we're going to be able to find which classes work in the schedule so that there'll be actual, and they're not going to be all the classes that you could take in culinary school. It's going to make sure that the schedules match up, but essentially some basic nutrition classes, culinary skills, you're actually going to be probably have to take one or two core classes, but then be able to also have some elective credit. The biggest, I think, feature of that is being able to take that, of course, to something else that's going to be standardized in the curriculum and working with dietitians in an outpatient setting in Providence in the afternoons to be able to take everything that they've learned. So it's being organized. There's going to be some standardized aspects, as with any curriculum, but there's also going to be some time for elective exploration as well. I hope that answered your question. Okay.